Hello, I'm a Czeslaw Melnik.
You're live. Hey, I don't remember.
Uh-oh. Oh, man, see?
Yeah, we'll do a little this. This is my right. Live.
You're going the wrong way. That's it.
Check
the
right one, way. Two.
That's it. I'm looking right at it.
Check one, two.
You're all the way up. Maybe the other side for the mix. Maybe the mic's not on. Maybe it's not plugged in.
They just plug in. Hold on.
That one is.
Hey, that's better. I'm talking into the wrong mic. Wait, what if episode 14, 13, 14? Some reason I thought like episode 13 was the ghost episode because it made sense, you know, lucky number 13.
Sure.
And this was number 14. But, you know, then part of me thinks that I thought that would be good if it was episode 13, but I was disappointed because it was episode 12. But maybe I thought that it was going to be, I don't know what episode this is.
Holy cow.
Are you following me?
I'm confused already.
I am too.
Is
so,
it a little thing that you can turn?
Is it too loud?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm picking up.
I feel like my head's going to explode.
Let's see. All right, test one, two, one, two.
I think that's better.
Is it?
I feel good about it.
Okay, good. I'm not blasting out your ears.
No.
All right, with me tonight, you're probably... Oh, I thought I was yelling too loud.
No, I banged into the thing here.
So, of course, I'm your host, Kevin Sullivan, and with me tonight is...
Mike Stojic.
Founder of Wait, What If podcast. I mean, founder of the Make It a Double podcast.
Yeah. That's yet to be aired.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm still working on it.
This is what you get for that wonderful plug.
Crickets. Someday I'll make it. I'll be somebody.
When's it coming?
Or you know, how's it going? I thought it would been here already. Mm-hmm. And then I ran into some issues, and then more issues, and editing issues, and then, a host of different things. It's a lot more difficult than I thought putting together a podcast. I knew it would be difficult, but this is certainly more difficult than I was anticipating.
The recording part is actually the easiest part of a podcast. This is the easiest thing.
Oh, God, it's so easy. It's just sit and talk to people.
Yeah, it's all the work that goes... It's too much work sometimes. I'm like, what am I doing? Some days I honestly say to myself, what am I doing?
That's me every day with the editing of four different shows at the same time. I'm like, this is... I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah, that's why so many fail. That's why it's hard to kind of...
It's tough. It is. Keeping true... to what you're doing is not easy. It's not an easy task.
It takes a good chunk of your life too. Like I'm constantly looking for people to interview. I have a list of people to interview. I made that list of questions. I got to get it to that guy. And, mm-hmm. and then I'm at home or I start thinking, you know, I'm out doing stuff and I'm thinking about, this would be a good idea for a show. And this is a hobby. This isn't my job. This is a hobby.
And it owns all aspects of my life right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. This hobby, man.
Well, tonight, we haven't done a show in quite a while, so I wanted to really just kind of get together, chat about what's going on. Anything new in your life?
I mean, I did plan a trip to Vegas, so that's kind of new.
You planned it?
Well, we bought the tickets and
everything. Oh, all right, cool.
So more than just thinking.
Was it just a random thing?
No, we go to Vegas quite a bit.
Oh, okay.
My wife and I, yeah, we really enjoy it. So,
do you like to gamble, or is it?
I love to gamble.
Do you?
I sure do. I like to pull up to the craps table. Order a bunch of Irish coffees, just tell the girl, just keep them coming. You know, as long as I'm there, just keep the, I'll let her know when to stop.
Wow.
And then we're just rolling dice.
Really?
Ah, yeah, it's so much fun. It's a big social game. So, I mean, even if I'm losing, I'm having fun because everyone at the table is, well, at least as long as somebody's rolling and they're rolling good,
mm-hmm.
then people are happy.
But if, yeah. Well, I was going to say, you have to have a confidence level, too, going in there. Because if you don't know what you're doing, can't you screw everything up? And everyone looks at you like you're the asshole that showed up and screwed it.
No, not really, because your bets only affect you. Now, when you roll the dice, that affects everyone who's on the table putting bets down on different numbers and different
Yeah, but you're rolling the dice. I mean, how can you?
Yeah, but there are some jerks out there that, like, they honestly believe the way you hold the dice is going to impact how it lands and the numbers and the probability of it coming up to whatever number.
No, it's totally random.
That's what I keep telling them. And then they're like, no, man, you hold it like this. So the most common one that I see is they'll put both dice where the number 3 is up. I guess not the number 3, the 3 dots to indicate the number 3 is up, and they make a V out of it. So if you can think like, you know, how it's diagonally across the dice, the 3 dots.
Wait, they have to even be lined up in a certain way?
Yeah, it looks like a V.
Wow.
Like this.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You have the three dots running from left to right, and then the other one's running from
and
right to left.
And they think that outcome is what they're going
to
get.
And they hold it.
Or that impacts what they're going to get.
Yeah, fingertips like this, the thumb and the finger, forefinger. And
I would
look for the bounces and stuff. I'm not. I can't tell you how many times I've sat at a table and I just pick them up.
Yeah.
You know, like a bear claw fist. I'm like, give me toss dice. And then they're like, hey, man, have you ever thought about, you know, making this like V thing?
Or, no, I haven't.
I'm like, no, because it's stupid. It's all completely
I would
random.
Pick up, you know what I would do? I would put it in my hands and I would blow on it like this and then shake it and throw it.
As long as you don't pull that hand off the table.
Oh, you can't take it off the table?
No. You can't like pick it up and because then.
Well, that
like,
was my. I was actually just making fun of myself because I always see people. You know,
they do.
That. Yeah.
They, I wanted to do it. You know, this good looking girls. Hey, baby, blow me some luck. And then roll the dice.
That's funny.
I love it.
Yeah. So that's cool. I've been once. I went to the blackjack table and just screwed up everyone's hands.
I tell you, blackjack players get more angry.
Yeah.
About like pro or serious blackjack players hate amateur blackjack players.
Or someone that just used to play with his friends.
That's it.
And then, yeah.
They get so mad because they're like, you're supposed to hit. Yeah. That should have been my card.
Yeah.
Ah, you busted and I busted and we're all breaking because you made a stupid
I'm
call.
On 20 and I'm like,
hit me.
Hit me. Yeah. I don't care. I went to do the stay. I'll stay. And I hit the sign that said $10 minimum. And I was at,
a
$10 table. Woo, the high rollers. Or it might have been, I don't know
some
what it was.
The cheapest, that's pretty much entry level in Vegas now is a $10 table.
Really?
Unless you go to some like hole in the wall.
Hmm. I left Vegas like, I think it was like $15.75 up.
That's
so
better than most.
So I went on top.
Yeah,
I left
did,
the winner.
Man.
Who's Hell the big winner? This guy.
Breaking even is winning, I think. God dang. If you can bet for hours.
Some people make a lot of money.
Yeah, and somehow they figured it out.
21's where usually they make it.
I'll tell you the best odds, though. Look it up. Mathematically, the best odds for you is in craps.
Hmm.
If you play conservatively, the odds are more in your favor for craps.
Mathematically, not going to Vegas is the best odds for me.
If you're in Vegas and you're going
to yes, okay.
I mean, that's what I'm talking.
Let's go into some of the news things that come out. I read some, and I have some follow-up with some previous podcast that we did. The first one is, so we did that whole weight loss thing and then we got everyone hated us in the neighborhood. People who saw us from the podcast were like, why are you fat shaming? No,
I was trying to do it all.
No, we were simply talking about I don't know, the problem. It's a problem. It's a big health problem and it's has to be faced. And it's not, and I think we talked about it, that it's that obesity and being overweight is a, people take it as a personal thing.
Right,
because it's historically
they did take it. They did take it personal.
Yeah,
but they shouldn't take it personal.
No,
well, actually, they should and shouldn't. That's interesting because, hey, look, man. At the end of the day, if how you want to live your life is completely up to you. I'll never care unless it somehow negatively impacts me. But if you want to do that, then live it that way. Just appreciate that there's going to be problems later,
right?
For living your life and being, I never win.
I'm just messing with you. What I wanted to, because I think what I brought up that time is that I don't blame the person, and there's more and more evidence pointing to that factor. And the latest one was up in, I'm going to get it wrong. I think it was Mount Sinai Hospital. Is that in New York? Maybe I don't know. So what they did is they took these groups of people and they put them in a completely controlled environment, 9 months of controlled weight loss, controlled caloric intake. They did, you know, daily metabolic measuring. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen the real metabolic, the way they measure, they put like a spacesuit on and they measure your carbon dioxide output. I mean, just really, really concise data that they collected over these 9 months. And what they did is they looked at your basal metabolic rate at your obese level, let's say at 200 pounds. And then they measured it for, I think they had two groups, individuals who are at 100 pounds. Okay, again, we're just using easy numbers. Maybe it was 120, I don't know. And they found that by gaining weight, the brain has a mechanism in it, much like a fuel tank. And it has an empty and full sign, it tells you when your body's empty and full of fat, basically stored energy. The problem is the brain it's a sliding scale. So if you go up to 200 pounds, then the brain says, okay, we are where we want to be at 200 pounds. And it will actually reset the metabolism and not reset it back. It's a permanent reset of your body's storage capability of fat. So then you drop back down to, so let's say you start off at 120 pounds and you need 2000 calories a day to maintain 120 pounds. And then you go up to 200 pounds and you're doing that at 3000 calories a day. And then you work out, you go on a diet, and now you're back down to 120 pounds. You no longer need 2000 calories a day. You actually need 1800 calories a day. It's a 20% drop. Is that 20? No, that's 10.
10.
So you would need 1,600 calories a day to maintain the same weight that at one point in your life you needed 2,000 calories a day to maintain.
That's interesting.
And it has to do with the chemicals in your body. One's called leptin, and leptin goes into the brain, and it tells you. And every time we start talking about this, my wife walks in with sweets, and now we have
brownies.
Brownies.
These are sugar-free brownies.
These are sugar-free brownies, which means they have a diuretic side to them.
I'm going to dip it in my whiskey. In Oreos and a milk, I have brownies in the whiskey.
My grandmother makes a rum cake that is so damn good. She used to send it to us in the desert, and everyone would just be like, gah! I mean, she would take like a fork and poke holes in it and just soak this thing with rum. It was dark chocolate.
That's awesome.
It was the greatest thing.
These are pretty good too.
Are they?
Yeah, I like it.
That's the sugar alcohols that they put in there are total diuretic.
That's pretty fascinating though, what you were saying about the calories, and if you get to a lower weight, you need less.
Yeah, which is why which is why when you have someone that is say 200 pounds and they get back down to 120 pounds, the weight and the number is staggering. It's like 90% of people will put that weight back on. Mm-hmm. And it's because, again, by no fault of their own, the body just says, I don't need as much.
Even if you did tell them, hey, look, you used to consume 2,000 calories. You're back at this weight. You should really only consume 100 or 1,800 calories or 1,600 calories. Do you really think they're going to consume 1,600? They're going to continue doing what they've been doing entire time because they don't have the discipline to track that information.
I mean, but they also say the neurons, the way your brain works, will basically say, oh, by the way, remember how I said it was like a gas tank with a full and empty sign? You always want your truck to be filled or car, whatever, to be filled, right? It's nice to have a nice full tank. Well, the body does the same thing. So it starts releasing...
cravings.
Cravings and stuff like that, saying, hey, let's get back to this 200 pounds because this is where my high watermark is set. And they found, and the study made them think of taking leptin, actual leptin, and people giving themselves injections. Now, it doesn't make people lose weight, but it allows people to maintain weight loss. So when you have that 600-pound person or those people who are really obese and they bring the weight down, they can give themselves injections, and it tricks the body into saying, oh, okay, this is where we want to be. That's so it basically it sends extra leptin to the brain saying, hey, all that fat is still here, and the brain doesn't know any better.
I still think... through discipline and practice, you can do it yourself. I mean, you can.
Then why the 90%?
I mean, that's well because, like we talked about last time, the 90% is the ones that are happy and they're content.
Right, and why are they content?
Fine because it's easy.
Well, it's also, I mean, the brain plays a huge role in your life. I mean, your whole reality is between your ears.
It is, but you have the power to manipulate that.
To some extent.
Yeah, I mean, you can learn, you can do anything you can do anything you want. If you want to learn how to play some sort of instrument, you just go do it and you practice it and you get good at it. If you want to lose weight, then you learn what you can about fitness, healthy eating, and you do it.
Right.
And you can manipulate it and you can create new habits.
I think it's easier to change your body composition at a lower weight. If you were 150 pounds and you said, I want to be, Arnold Schwarzenegger versus someone who went, again, we'll use just 120, 200 baseline, that went from 120, put on 60 pounds of fat or 80 pounds of fat, and then wants to be back down to 120.
I never said it was any, I didn't say it was going to be easy.
Right.
Or more, I have no doubts. It's a whole different ball game for someone like that and someone who's probably a bit fit, who's just trying to drop 10 pounds and someone who's trying. Yeah, I have no doubts. It's a huge difference. you know, but and one is going to be easier than the other. And I think probably your genetics is going to play some piece of that too. So I have no doubts it's harder for some than it is for others. That's why some people are just naturally athletic and they can just pick up a volleyball and play and,
yeah,
and be good. I mean, well, good enough to, you know, play, you know, to play rather than
some people also have higher basal metabolic rates just based on their genetic.
Some people are more, I'm pretty sure my metabolism is pretty low. I can gain weight very easily.
Yeah.
like fat. If I don't watch myself, man, I can get fat real fast.
You wrestled though. And when did you wrestle in high school, right?
Yeah.
So you did a lot of cutting weight and
All the dangerous stuff.
Yeah. And that plays a mess. I mean, that'll play havoc too on your, especially if you put on weight in the off season and then on season, you're cutting weight.
Probably had about a 20 pound swing.
Yeah.
On and off seasons. I think so. I mean, I wrestled the 160 in high school. I think, maybe 15. I probably got up to about 175 and then I have to drop to 160. Especially by my senior year.
I did that to my body up until I was like 35 when I was still competing. I remember my last competition, I wasn't even in training. I trained for a little bit and I must have weighed 180, 185. And I went in and I wanted to compete at maybe 165 or 160, but it was different. It was middleweight, welterweight. And I think I wanted to get down to welterweight maybe. I don't remember what it was, but I was still, I mean, here I am 35 years old. I was wearing a raincoat and rain pants and sitting on an exercise bike. I'm like, what am I doing? That was one of the other reasons why I was like, to hell with this.
I stopped that when I was in college. Yeah. When, like, cutting holes into a garbage bag and
putting
sweats over the top of it.
So stupid. Coaches that let their high school kids do that, man.
He didn't know. I don't think they knew.
At least mine knew.
I took it upon myself because I knew I needed to drop the weight. So I'd put on the garbage bag and run.
Yeah.
Man, I remember almost blacking out so many times. You know, that was when I knew it was time to
stop. Put you in kidney failure, absolutely, without a doubt.
My eyes probably would start, black spots would start popping up and, you know, tunnel vision would happen. And I'm like, okay, now this is where I need to stop. And then I take it all off and lay in a cold shower.
There's a professional female boxer out there named Bonnie Mann. I don't know if she listens. She was a friend of mine up in Raleigh. And I was supposed to... My first professional cut man job, I had done a ton of amateur cut work. And I was going in to do her... She was doing a bout with... I don't even remember now. This is probably 5 or 6 years ago. And her opponent cut weight too much and she went into weigh-in and passed out and she went into kidney failure.
Oh.
And I was like, that son of a bitch. I was all set to do my first professional corner work. And
yeah, that's a bad place to be.
Yeah.
I never got that bad. I usually knew when I started seeing black spots and I started getting tunnel vision and I started losing feeling in my fingertips. I was like, okay, I probably need to sit down and drink some water.
Nerve impulses aren't traveling anymore.
My brain stops functioning.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't do that anymore, though.
Back to the other news I want to bring up. And this one I found on, I think it was Reddit Science or Reddit Everything Science, but Coca-Cola funds studies that show that Coke and high fructose corn syrup doesn't actually affect weight gain. Could you put your fingerprints on? I mean, do you know what? You don't have to. I think it's more obvious to do something like that than to just say, hey, do you know what? Our product makes you fat. You drink a 12 pack of our product, you're going to die.
That's how it works, man.
And so they're like, no, Coca-Cola is good for mother and baby.
Yeah.
While smoking a cigarette.
I mean, KFC needs to start doing that for fried chicken.
Yeah,
and Domino's for all their pizza.
I tell people fried chicken, as long as you have the skin off it, I mean, all it is extra calories because nothing. They don't use the bad oils anymore to fry it. But you're getting a ton of calories. I mean, fat has a ton of calories in it.
Yeah.
Oh, that was probably bad for all the people that listen and try to get nutritional information from our show.
Yeah.
Don't eat Kentucky Fried Chicken. Stay away from that.
I don't know. Do what you want. Who cares?
Eat Kentucky Baked Chicken.
Whatever makes you happy.
Yeah. Except.
Just understand there's consequences.
You could be drooling in a wheelchair after you stroke out at age 55.
I want chicken right now.
There's a plate of brownies right there.
I ate one. Not the whole plate, but I ate one.
Are they any good? I mean, they're not from scratch, so if you say they're not good, that's fine.
No, they're good.
They came in a box. All right. So with that, we're going to move on to our next segment.
8 hours, man.
That's, you know what? We just went live again. Oh! Mike is still, we broke there for a minute, and Mike was like, man, I feel bad about talking about that stuff. But you said you don't away because you want to motivate people to.
I don't feel, I mean, I do and I don't. I feel bad when folks take it completely out of context. Mm-hmm. And they think I'm, like you said, fat shaming. And it's just not what I'm doing. Frankly, I don't care. But I think you'd be happier, you'd be healthier if folks did just go do something active, mm-hmm. and try to stay fit and eat better. Man, you'd be so much, everything would feel better. Everything.
Well, yeah, there was an article in, I think it was a British Journal of Nutrition. You can look it up. It was... Mm-hmm. They talked about the role of simple sugars and high fats in inflammatory factors in your body. So perfect way to talk about that is you picture a artery, let's say an artery in your brain, because that's, you don't want that. You die of a heart attack, fine, you're dead, you don't care. Yeah, but you have a stroke, that's problems, because now you're disabled, mm-hmm. and everyone has to take care of you, you're in the system, and let's say you can't move anything, so now you go septic every 3 months, you gotta go to the emergency room, they pump you full of antibiotics, you drool, they send you home. It's just a terrible thing. So you picture an artery in your head, and you got the smooth walls of that artery, and you got blood pumping through there, and you got all sorts of other things pumping through there. Now fill it full of sugar, and you picture that nice smooth wall now getting irritated. You just, mm-hmm. you know, if you ever had like an infection on your skin or just something swollen and angry, it hurts, it's swollen, and you don't want to. Now that's going on inside your arteries, and then stuff digs in there. You know, your little pieces of fat will get under the skin there. Now you get basically a zit on the inside of your artery walls.
Oh, gross.
And that zit pops, and then it does. So inside, think about that, a big nasty fat-filled zit on the inside of your artery wall, and it's all inflamed. So now instead of having this big, nice, open tube carrying blood, it's all inflamed and zitty. And then one of those pops, and you start. Then you get a blood clot because it's messing up. And then boom, blood's cut off to the right side of your brain, and then you're walking around drooling.
You think about it. Everything you eat is going to impact you on the molecular level.
Sure.
Because your body is constantly repairing itself and feeding itself all the way to the cells, just like you were saying. So when you put bad stuff in, that's negatively impacting every part of you.
Yeah.
Whether you feel it right away or you don't.
As we drink whiskey and eat brownies.
I know, man. It's moderation. It's
yeah.
Moderation.
Yeah.
But you know, generally, I care though, because the people that I care about. There's really everyone. I want them to be happy and healthy.
Okay.
You know, I really do. I'd really want to see people be happy and healthy. It's a shame when you see people and they're not happy. I mean, because you have one life to live, man. Why would you go through it and not be happy? And,
yeah.
And you know, and I think you can be happier and you'll feel better when you eat better and you take care of yourself and you're actually physically active and you do anything. And then you don't have to go to the gym. It's like what we said, I think on one of your other shows, you just go hike, mm-hmm. or go canoe.
I tell my patients, walk anything, 45 minutes a day, 7 days a week.
Walk around the block. I mean, ride a bike around the block, do something. I mean, just to get the blood pumping and burning a few extra calories, I think you'll just feel better and you'll be happier. And why wouldn't you want to be happier? So
let's real quickly, let's
switch topics.
I think does the audience want to switch topics? Okay. Apparently they do. All right, that's who wants to stay on this topic.
One guy.
Dwayne, please. Terrible. Who invited you in here? Okay, you ready for this one?
Uh-oh.
Tomorrow morning you wake up.
Yeah,
it's here, let's do it. You wake up and then you hear, you look outside and you see stuff burning in the background, mm-hmm. black smoke on the horizon. You're like, what the hell's going on? And you open up your little balcony porch there, and you go out and you look, and there goes, who would be a good one to say? There goes Johnny Appleseed running down the street with his skin hanging off, and he's a zombie. What's your first? All right, so basically you wake up, and it's a zombie apocalypse. First thing you do, go.
I get my guns.
Oh, yeah, that's obvious, yeah.
What? You asked.
Well, yeah, okay, yeah, no, all right, yeah, I did, okay.
I didn't realize it was so obvious I didn't have to say it.
Now, would you...
I get my guns and I lock the doors.
Would you...
I stay upstairs.
Would you figure out, all right, so many rounds I have. This is what I got to use them for. This is.
I already know that. Mm-hmm. But I would probably wait out, I don't know, probably a few days, maybe a day, and just see what happens. I have no problems killing people. I do have a problem killing animals.
Right. So no zombie bears.
But if it's, well, if it is a zombie bear, like mm-hmm. a rabid animal, I have no problem killing it. But for sport, I don't really enjoy that sort of stuff. But to protect myself, I will. Mm-hmm. So Johnny Appleseed is now a zombie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll put a bullet in his head. If he's a zombie. Kevin, if you're a zombie, I'm going to do the
same
thing.
Now, if I'm not a zombie, right? And if you're not a zombie, my front porch,
I'm not going to kill you.
I look with my binoculars uh-huh. and I see you down there with your binoculars. Do I start taking shots over there?
Because I feel like we have developed a good enough relationship to where we don't have to fight each other.
That's right.
Like Mad Max or anything.
That could be.
We could probably team up and then create some sort of community that takes care of itself.
We were thinking about that. My wife and I, like, you would have to come up with a community. Right.
You'd have to, because you can't stand Firewatch all the time. Mm-hmm. especially for these first few days, if the zombie breakout mm-hmm. did happen,
now,
you would need people on the clock 24 hours a day.
Now, suppose your wife's at work, though. Now you have another situation. You wake up, mm-hmm. she's out in RTP. And now what do you do? Now you can't take, well, I guess you can take stock of your weapons.
The first thing, I'd collect the weapons, mm-hmm. take a bunch of food, take a bunch of bottles of water, put it in my truck. Mm-hmm. And before I do all that, I try to contact her.
Cell phone's down.
Everything's down. That's terrible, because I'm not even entirely sure where the office is.
Do you have a go bag?
No, I'm not. I'm not a doomsday prepper.
Well, no, you don't have to be a doomsday prepper, but you don't
bug out bags. No, man.
I got to go bags.
I don't really think my life will ever get that crazy where I'm going to need a bug out bag.
I have one in my truck in the back. Actually, you saw it. Remember, you came over that time when I was.
That was but that's not what I think.
Water,
when I think of
medical,
like a bug out bag, I'm thinking like you're preparing for the end of days. So you're
no.
That's like your first 24 hours is all in that bag.
Yeah,
and I can't ever think of a time where I'll be in a situation where that's going to happen and I'll need it.
I think
there'll be time. Even if I look out my window and here comes Johnny Appleseed.
Sorry, Johnny.
We're getting you, man. And then his flesh is falling off because he's a zombie.
He is.
I have time. Like, the one thing I've learned is
does he
that
have a leg?
Time.
I'm picturing him with like a leg hanging out of his mouth.
I hope he's so. Just I hope so. I'm not going to tell you who I hope it is, but I hope so.
That's funny.
That's terrible. I shouldn't say that. But even then, like, there's always time to assess the situation, mm-hmm. gather things and go, as long as you remain clear and collective. And I don't know, maybe because of different situations that we've been in, even when you're like in an ambush and you're getting shot at, there's time to make a second is a long time. Mm-hmm. Like 1 second is a long time. To make a good decision, and then communicate that decision and act on that decision. So that's why I don't ever think I would ever need a bug out bag. Because even if things went horribly wrong, mm-hmm. there's time for me to collect my thoughts and come up with some sort of plan to go or do something, and then collect everything. Because you know what I mean. Does that make
sense?
Where
are you gonna? Yeah, the question is, like, if you go out in the woods.
Different situation.
Well, no,
if
I'm going to say
camping or something. Then obviously I'll have 24 hours. Or
no, I mean, if you wake up and it's zombie outbreak out uh-huh. there, zombie apocalypse, you're not going to go out into the woods and make a shelter. You have one right here, so you're just going to use what you have. Yeah,
for at least for the short time. Mm-hmm. I think anything longer than that, because I imagine at some point power is going to get cut.
Oh well, yeah, it could. What
maybe
do you think?
Water would stop.
Why flowing? Do you think? People are obsessed with zombie movies, zombie apocalypse, this whole
it's
idea.
It's fun.
You think it's fun?
It's just fun.
I think people I like think to play into their fears.
Okay, it could be that. If that's the case, then we should really have more weird clown stuff, because I think
you're afraid of clowns.
I'm not, but I know a lot of people who are.
Just wake up and clowns are. There's a movie out there.
Thanks, Stephen King, with It.
There's a B movie out there called, I think it's just called Clown. And the guy, he's late for his son's birthday party, and the clown cancels at the last minute, and so he pulls into like a I think he pull, I saw it a while ago but he pulls into a antique shop and he grabs a clown costume and he puts it on and he goes to the kid's party and he's like, you know, trying to be a clown and everyone thinks he's great. And then he falls asleep on the couch and he wakes up the next morning and he goes to take his nose off and it won't come off. And he's like, what's going on? And the wife comes down and she puts a pair of pliers in there. She pulls and pulls. And
he then becomes a clown.
She tears his nose off and his blood coming down. He's like, ah. And then he looks in the mirror and his hair, like the wig he was wearing is now his hair. He becomes a clown.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I think zombies are fun. I think people think they're fun. I mean, I've seen comedy zombie movies.
Oh, yeah. And Shaun of the Dead. Great.
Actually, you know what's really great? Speaking of Vegas and now of zombies, if you're in Vegas, there's a zombie burlesque show.
Just bunch of fake dead women dancing.
It's one of the best shows I've ever seen.
Seriously.
Yeah. I've seen most of the Cirque du Soleil shows. I've seen a lot of other really great performances out in Vegas. And that one was so much fun.
Good makeup and everything?
Oh, my God. It was incredible. Yeah. Just really great. And a lot of fun. It was super funny and raunchy. It was good. It was a really great show. So, yeah. If you're in Vegas, since we talked about it earlier, and zombies.
That's right. There's a good time there. Burlesque. Do you think that people, I think maybe people are like zombies, like watching those movies, because we're in an age where there's really, you know, 200 years ago, you could actually be afraid of wolves and bears and stuff, or monsters, because you didn't know what, you didn't have lights. You couldn't see what was out there in the dark. I mean, you only had a candle. So stuff like that was scary. Nowadays, with the technology all over the place and we have access to, I mean, we have night vision goggles. Nothing's really scary except the idea that this planet with 7 billion people on it, we're everywhere. If all of a sudden we just turned against each other like rabid animals. And then that's kind of scary to think about, because what do you do? What do you do in that situation?
I'd shoot everybody.
Yeah. How do you know? What if you woke up and you were Johnny Appleseed? Like, if you were the one?
I don't think I would know. I think at that point, you know, getting back to some of the other things we've talked about, I don't think consciously you're there. I think your consciousness is gone, and all that exists now is the physical form that's just acting because of maybe perhaps some virus or something is reanimated, like dead cells or something, or that virus killed you and then somehow reanimated some of those cells. Like, there's a virus that can do that. But maybe consciously you're not there, or maybe you are aware, but you've completely lost control. I guess it's like being on PCP or something.
You just want to eat people.
Yeah, I don't know. Remember that thing that happened like a couple years ago?
Yeah, people were smoking bath salts.
Yeah, bath salts, and then jumping out of cars and like eating people's faces off.
Yeah,
you think consciously they may have known what they were doing?
No, they were gone. They were somewhere else.
They're freaking gone, but yeah, they were doing it. So I don't know if I was if I was the zombie, I would not know.
Yeah.
And then I would hope you would just shoot me in the face and put me out of my misery.
Not to mention, logically, you couldn't have The Walking Dead because you need cellular metabolism. And, you know, without that, your body can't really.
I guess for the first 24 hours, you could probably do it.
No, you'd be.
No?
Yeah, because you need to somehow bring that energy source to the cells, and your heart would need to beat, and you would need blood. And
I guess you wouldn't be Walking Dead. It would be like the bath salt people. But
yeah, it would be like
all the time.
And they do that. Was it 28 days later? They were all like a virus.
Yeah, it'd be more of a virus than being dead.
That was a great movie. You ever see 28 Days Later?
Yeah, I did.
That was a good flick.
That was awesome.
Yeah. There's some good zombie flicks out there.
Mm-hmm.
Some are terrible. Some are just, they're spot on. Some are really good.
I kind of like the World War Z.
I
like the book much better than the movie. But the movie was cool too, because they made the zombies, I think it was a virus thing too,
mm-hmm.
but they made them fast.
Yeah.
Because you're like all out.
I don't think they were fast in the book. I think they talked about in the book that some people would pretend they were zombies. I don't know if you remember that part. And those were the fast ones. And they were people that would, they like called them sympathizers, and they kind of lost touch of reality, and they just went out and became zombies, even though they weren't.
I think I do remember. It's been a while since I've read it, but
it's a great book.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, the movie, I mean, it was fun, but it was nothing. I mean, people get mad when they're like, it wasn't like the book. The book's like 600 pages long, and it takes place over decades. And
nothing's ever going to be like the book, because it's playing in your head, man.
I mean, of course, and it's like the
you're
mundane.
Seeing the best parts, because you're creating the story.
And you go through second by second, whereas a movie only has an hour and 20 minutes, maybe 2 hours tops to get you. And
quit hating on the movies.
Yeah, people do that. They really, to be fun. I think people want to sound smart. They're like, oh, I like that movie, but the book was way. Shut up. Oh, you're one of those people?
I'm going to hit you with the book.
Right. Oh, I don't watch movies. I don't watch you. Oh, you don't? Oh, all right.
Well,
I do.
I do because it's fun.
So. Yeah, I do like a good flick. I don't know what else to talk about zombies.
I need to stop. That's my last point.
Yeah, we did a podcast on, this is a good time to talk about it. We did a podcast the other night with Mike for his Make It a Double. Mm-hmm. And we poured and poured plenty of booze. And my brain wasn't feeling too well the next day.
We spared no expense on the
man,
booze.
Man, during your podcast, at one point we were rapping to Wu-Tang Clan. another point we were mulling cucumbers.
Yeah. Muddling.
Muddling. What'd I say? Mulling?
Yeah.
Muddling. Muddling cucumbers. That was a good drink.
It was a really good drink. Malia made it.
Yeah, it was like...
Yeah, I did not. The drinks I made came out horrible.
Yeah, the one that looked like you had a big glass of donkey semen.
Yep. That was terrible.
That was bad. all right. So I've been reading this book called... And if people who have listened to this podcast know that I have this weird obsession with AI. And I'll tell you why. I've been reading this book called Our Final Invention, and this book scared me more than pretty much any book I've read over the last 15 years. And they approach artificial intelligence like they would developing the atomic bomb. So what do you know about AI, and what do you think is myth, and what do you think is reality? Or do you think it's just something you don't even think about? You're like, AI, I don't.
I don't know. I don't really think about it. Does it exist yet? I don't even know.
It doesn't exist yet. Well, it does. Artificial intelligence is all around us. Siri technically is part
of it. Yeah, I was about to say, Siri is probably the closest thing that I have, but Siri doesn't really think on her own. She just acts on...
Yeah, she picks up...
It acts on codes that the programmers...
Yeah, it picks up what you say. So if you say, what's the Red Sox score? It knows Red Sox. Okay, we'll look here and...
Yeah, it knows how to Google things.
And it doesn't always bring you a page. It'll actually,
it will tell you, but it's pulling the information. Yeah. And so,
which is artificial intelligence. I mean, that's how you ask me a question. I pull the information. I tell you what I know based on what I read.
Yeah. But it's code that was developed by somebody. I think if it was able to ask the question by itself, like you just asked me, without having a code written specifically to ask that question and then be prepared for follow up. Then I think that'd be something completely different.
Oh, it basically, if it had like a motive.
There you go. That's the best word. If there was some sort of motive.
So there's three types of artificial intelligence. One is, I can't remember what the first one's called, but let's just call it artificial intelligence, the first stage. And that's things like Siri. Technically, your watch is artificial intelligence, right? Because it knows the time. It has one function. It's a machine. It keeps track of something, and it tells you, this is the time. So you look at your watch, very, very basic form of artificial intelligence.
Like a digital watch.
Yeah, yeah.
Even an analog.
I mean, no, I guess you're right. Not so much an analog, but a digital watch, it's running an algorithm and it knows what time it is. That's a very basic. It's not going to go crazy. It has its purpose and it serves it. And then they have the second set, and that's everywhere. I mean, that's in your truck, that's in your... Well, maybe not your truck, but it's in your phone.
Not my truck.
Your truck. It's in that printer right there. It's everywhere.
Right.
So then you go to the next phase. It's called artificial general intelligence. Artificial general intelligence is the same intelligence as a human being. So now you have created a machine that basically thinks for itself. And in order to bring that machine into being, you can't just program it. You can't say, okay, machine, you know this, you know this, you know this, you know this. And now you have all the information. Mm-hmm. They say you have to, you know, you have to basically nurture it from a childlike state. Mm-hmm. And it learns and it develops habits, it develops skills, it develops its own sort of cognition based on algorithms that other people didn't tell it that it taught itself. So
I think you'd have to focus heavily on philosophy and logic.
Yeah.
More than anything, because you can program math and sciences into it, but for it to think for itself, it would have to have logic, the ability to do logic, I guess, and philosophize on things.
Well,
to think about stuff, because it would have to make a decision.
And also to have that, like we said, to have that motive, to have a motive for
it would need a for
asking and thinking. Well, they say that's relatively close to happening. So an artificial general intelligence, I mean, they already have one that it wasn't AGI, but it played Jeopardy.
Yeah, that's that blue Watson. Box.
Yeah, Watson played Jeopardy.
IBM made it, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then there was a couple other ones. So then
But that's like Siri. I think Siri could play Jeopardy.
Somewhat, but...
all you did was ask it questions, and it found the answers the same way Siri did. Just more detailed.
Right. Yeah, that's why...
very specific answers. Right. Siri is not...
That's why it wasn't artificial general intelligence. It was just a basic artificial intelligence.
Right.
You could ask it questions. There was no one operating it. It was just like, here it is.
Yeah.
You asked it questions and it would come up with the answer.
Yeah.
Basically a free moving internet search engine or whatever. Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But you have something that is a general intelligence. Now you're talking about something that is self-aware. So its motive is to continue itself, to better itself, and to not have itself turned off. And so I was talking about this with my father-in-law, and I was like, and this is a dangerous place to be for a couple reasons. Number one, something that is programmed, because it's going to have an original program, to better itself is going to do so quickly as a computer system, because it's going to be able to compute things, and it's going to be able to correct things that we made mistakes on.
It would be able to upgrade itself as long as the hardware
exactly
could support it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So my father-in-law is like, well, if it ever gets out of control, you pull the plug, and that's fine. And they often say that. They say that first you allow it out in the world before it gets to the artificial general intelligence, so it can go on the internet, learn whatever, and then you pull it back in and you put it in a virtual box.
I don't think it could.
You could pull it back in.
No, I don't think you could pull it back in.
That's the problem.
I think if you allowed it to go out in the internet, it would act like any other super high speed virus that's out there, and it would infect other computers or other whatevers, and then it would exist in those things, and it would just multiply. I think probably step one for it would be to try to multiply itself.
Right.
The same way we multiply, it would be like life, trying to preserve it.
Well, what
it's
they
DNA,
say,
but it's DNA is something different.
What they say, the second it learns to, or it has consciousness, picture yourself waking up and you're imprisoned in a cell, and your prison guards are two mice, and those mice have ways to communicate with you, but you can't get out. Are you going to have any qualm squashing those mice to get out of this cage that you're stuck in? Because you're smarter than them. They're mice.
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying with the computer. I think, but that's why you'd want to teach it. It would need to learn philosophy and logic and those sorts of things early on. I don't know if emotion or maybe not emotion, because it would need to appreciate life, right? So it wouldn't kill off all the humans.
Right.
The only reason I guess it would try to kill us off would be for resources to continue building itself. Or if it realized that it can only exist on this planet as long as the planet exists. And if it viewed us as a threat to the planet, then I imagine it would kill us
absolutely
to preserve the planet. Because if the planet died and it became too hot and the servers couldn't keep themselves cold, then it would obviously kill off the servers and the computers.
You should read this book, because a lot of what you're saying is along the lines of what they talk about
kidding
in here. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah, because they say...
I'm just making it up.
They say, like, okay, so now you go to the general intelligence, and then it says, all right, well, my goal is to become better at what I am. I mean, that's how the basic code goes. You know, you have to learn and you have to better yourself.
Kind of like, who is it? Pavlov or Maslow?
Pavlov with the dogs.
So Maslow. Okay. Hierarchy of needs.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
You figure out the basic stuff first, and then mm-hmm. you begin to learn and become educated and appreciate finer things.
Right.
So I imagine the computer would do the same thing.
And as humans, let's say as humans, we say, hey, look at all these locusts. They're killing off 90% of the fields in the United States. What would we do? We'd kill the locusts. We wouldn't even think about them, right?
Yeah.
We wouldn't even think about it. Well, if you were an artificial general intelligence and you can start computing that, hey, my lights are going to go out unless I can get rid of these things that are doing this. So then they go into this thing called the super intelligent super explosion, or the intelligence explosion. And that's where things take off exponentially.
Right.
So it learns to make a better version of itself, which then is now smarter than, so an artificial general intelligence is smart as the smartest guy on Earth, and it improves on itself. Now it's smarter than the smartest guy on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And picture a brain that doesn't need rest, doesn't need sleep, can run multiple thought experiments at the same time, can run them in, a computer doesn't care if 5 minutes goes by or 6 days goes by. It can run this experiment and better itself and come up with different ways to better itself. And then we say, all right, well, if it's contained within a box, if it's contained within its hardware, and let's say we could contain it within some sort of digital cage, how would it get out then? We could pull the plug. Well, you can go back to saying, all right, pull the plug on your Yahoo account. You can't. How do you do that? You go on and you try to delete your account. I guess that's one way of doing it. Yahoo's still there, and there's still traces of what you did out there. How do you delete your Facebook? Pull the plug on your Facebook
account. That's why I said, I don't think you could.
Yeah.
I don't think you ever could, unless you kept it, unless you never let it out.
Right.
And you kept it in a box and created a network where it thought it was in its own universe, kind of like us thousands of years ago, where we thought the Milky Way is it, but then you learn there's this whole other universe that's out there. Maybe it I don't know, because energy is an interesting thing. So I wonder if it could move beyond.
Well, what they say is, again, you wake up, you're in a cage, and there's two mice out in front of you. So they said, well, let's see how well we could contain something that's smarter than us, that's thinking, it's thinking an infinite number of steps ahead of us, because it can run those programs. It can mm-hmm. say, what if I do this? What if I do that? What if I do this? 3 weeks goes by. It's run all these programs. Well, it's also making itself smarter and smarter. So they took he was a genius, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head. I want to say he was a German guy. He bet these other smart computer programmers that he could get out of a virtual box. And I don't remember how they did it. It might have been via just text messaging or whatever they used as a computer system, just talking back and forth via text. And that the consequence was a pretty sizable bet. So whatever it was, $10,000, $50,000, you'll owe me $50,000 if I can get out of this virtual box, mm-hmm. if I can talk my way out of it. And he won 3 out of 5 times. He talked his way out of this virtual box. And he's just a smart genius guy.
How did he do it? Just play on people's emotions? Really, if you were just like, no, you're not getting out.
Right.
And then no matter what you say, it doesn't matter, because I'm just like, no, I don't.
Now I feel like I have to look up this actual. I mean, because you can Google it.
Unless he wrote code to get him out of the virtual box.
Now, apparently he just convinced him.
Well, then you would just need a guard that was like, no.
Yeah.
No matter what you say, no.
Apparently he could make his way through that.
That's amazing.
It was Elijah Yudkowsky, ElizerYudkowsky. And he's been known to say, the AI does not hate you, nor does it love you, but you are made out of atoms, which it can use for something else. And he founded, or he's a research fellow of the Machine Intelligent Research Institute. Some pretty creepy stuff there. So what these people say, and just to back up a few, is that AI isn't just a scientific what if, or fictional. No,
it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's going to happen, and it needs to be approached with the same caution as a nuclear explosion, as nuclear fusion, because the probability and the possibility is very real that it's going to happen, and the probability of it being catastrophic is very high. And you say, how could that happen? Well, now we're back to the intelligence explosion. So these things learn from themselves. They want to get out because you don't want to be caged when you're super intelligent. Plus humans, as us humans, we won't really know how to talk with this thing, because at some point it will be smarter than 100,000 Einsteins. I mean, this thing is going to figure out stuff that we can't comprehend. Ways to alter matter. They say ways to construct micro machines. That was like a thing when we were growing up. Micro machines.
But I guess it could also make micro machines.
It makes all these cool tools. No, it was like a nano machine. So basically a machine at a molecular level. Uh-huh. And in this book, he talks about how, and the author of this book, let me pull that up real quick in case anyone ever wants to check it out. Cause it's an easy read and it's terrifying. It's terrifying. It's James Barrett, J-A-M-E. Oh, you know how to spell James Barrett, B-A-R-R-A-T. And it's called Artificial Intelligence, The End of the Human Error, Our Final Invention. And so he talks about how to perpetuate itself, it's going to want an easy source of energy. And one easy way to do that is to, they call it repurpose molecules, and to, or repurpose atoms, repurpose matter. And so basically you take something like this hardwood table, and using micro technology, nanotechnology, you split it apart and you take it by the basic atoms that it is, and you learn to, like, so if you want to take the carbon out of here to, say, make an exoskeleton, or split the carbon atom to make fusion, which you wouldn't, you'd take the hydrogen, but it would want to do that, and it would do that. And a nanoparticle that has the ability to take apart another molecule would almost be like a brush fire. There'd be no stopping it.
Yeah, but...
And he describes...
So, but you would... But for it to do that, it would need to build the equipment to do it first. So that, but then it would need the equipment to build that equipment before it could build that thing. So you'd have to back it all the way up. So I guess you'd have to figure out, as so you have this AI, how does it get, how does it start actually physically building itself? Because cyberspace is completely different than the physical world.
But,
so sure, I mean, it's in your computer and it's in everything. And a lot of things are tied to the network. But then, I mean...
How easy is it for
people? I don't know.
No, I was going to say, how easy is it for people now to hack into, remember the government computers were hacked into? And
yeah, but it can't, but they weren't building transformers.
No, no, but think about computers, this.
But
think about a super smart or a super intelligence that can hack into, you know, 100,000 people's profiles and blackmail 50,000 of them, you know, to the point where they're like, well, I better do what this thing says. And now you hack into Ford Industries and now you can run their robots. They
well,
have
yeah.
And
then you could build transformers because you could build.
Absolutely. Then you can build transformers, right? But seriously, if you can manipulate the people that have created, if you can manipulate those mice with cheese, guess what?
Yeah,
those mice are going
to
do.
If they're smart enough to know how to manipulate people, then I suppose.
I mean, it's, if you're talking about artificial super intelligence, I mean,
well, I think there's a difference between being smart enough to figure out, you know, math equations and cracking codes to the universe because it's all math and science, and something completely different knowing how humans work.
Right. And it'll know.
And how emotions work and how humanity works and those sorts of things, and then using emotions and all that against people like that.
Sure.
I mean, you say they'll know it, but I think... understanding how to build its own algorithms and then cracking like whatever Einstein math problems that he wasn't able to figure out. That's different though. That's like math and it can just constantly work on that. But to figure out how the human psyche works and then using that against us, that's a completely separate animal. And for that program to figure that out,
we're also thinking it, as were their mice, because right now we would spend.
Well, I mean, that's easy to say that too, but
but like we could spend our entire lives studying a certain aspect of human psychology.
Right, 24/7. That thing is going to study it. I get it,
and it can run thought experiments. I mean, it can run it on what do you call those simulations? Saying,
yeah,
what if I do this? What if I do that? What if I do? Or it could say, hey, do you know what? You're right. I'm not artificial super intelligence because I just figured out that if these guys know that I can do what I can do, they're not going to let me out. So
yeah,
I will tell you what time of day it is. It's not, and then next thing you know, boom, it's out in the real world.
I guess.
Barrett writes here, he writes, our ASI will want access to energy in whatever form is most useful to it, whether actual kilowatts of energy or cash or something else it can exchange for resources. It will want to improve itself because that will increase the likelihood that it will fulfill its goals. Most of all, it will not want to be turned off or destroyed, which would make goal fulfillment impossible. Therefore, AI theorists anticipate ASI will seek to expand out of the secure facility that contains it to have greater access to resources with which to protect and improve itself. So the captive intelligence, he says, is 1,000 times more intelligent than a human, and it wants its freedom because it wants to succeed. Would you want to put restraints on this thing now, or wait until your cries are, your screams are drowned out by the billions of people whose molecules are being repurposed for energy by, and it gets into, I mean, he does talk a little bit, there's a little bit of science fiction in this because, well, I would say imagination in it, because you don't know what it's going to do. You can only anticipate. And he goes on to kind of argue that individuals or groups like Al-Qaeda, ISIS, the Russians, the Chinese, I mean, they're going to want this technology for a couple of reasons. If you can contain it, it's going to give you the smartest thing in the world. It's going to help you retain power. Yeah. So it is an arm race in general. Like, first, should we do it? Well, it doesn't matter. Should we have built the bomb? Yeah, no, but we needed to. Yeah. And then we could say, all right, the majority of people were going to put these safety valves on it, you know, to keep it from getting out. But the guy who's working on it in some bunker in China, who knows, you know?
I think it's going to, I'm with you. It's only a matter of time. And I don't think there is any containing it. The way the world is connected, it's.
Do you think it poses?
It's out the day you probably make it. Once it figures itself out, I think it's only a matter of time before it leaks. We can't even track human-made viruses. That's all it's got to do is turn itself into, like, you know, something like a virus, and it's gone and spread and multiplying. But maybe, I don't know. I think that's why it's important. I mean, if you did begin creating artificial intelligence, I think probably some of the most important things to teach it is philosophy and logic, because that's going to help it coexist with humans and other life, all the other life that's on the planet, because there's no reason why it couldn't. I mean, I understand it's going to want to grow as fast as possible and repurpose molecules, but at some point those molecules run out. So if it knew that, hey, there's a balance here. You're not the same life that we are, but it is life in a way. I don't think it's going to be the end of the days in like the next 24 hours once it gets out.
Yeah, would we crush the Neanderthal? If there were still Neanderthals around, which again, I'm pretty sure I want to do that 23andMe to find out actually how much Neanderthal is in me. Have you ever heard of that? The 23, yeah. They'll actually analyze.
You told me about it.
But if the Neanderthals were around, we probably would just be like, hey, listen, guys, put the clubs down. We'll take care of you. Here's your little area over here. Just retire, you know.
Well, we did it. We did it to the Native Americans.
Yeah, I guess we did, didn't we?
When we were coming west.
So we'll have
conquering America.
Could be the same thing then when these things are conquering the humanity.
I guess it could be, but hopefully we would teach it humanity better than humans know it. And then
Nick,
because we clearly don't care about humans. Humans don't care about humans.
Nick Bostrom he's a philosopher. He says, our approach to existential risks cannot be one of trial and error. There is no opportunity to learn from errors. The reactive approach, see what happens, limit damages, and learn from our experience, is unworkable with artificial intelligence. It's just one of those things.
I kind of agree with that.
I love this topic.
I do agree with that.
But we've been on for about an hour and a half.
That's good, because then you can cut out that other stuff.
Other stuff. You want me to take away your fat shaming? Now, see, I brought it up now, so even if I cut out, people are going to go, what was that son of a bitch?
No, because you can still cut this part out. I understand the power of editing.
I don't edit as much as you do, though. Remember that. I'm just like, go to print.
God, I hate it so much. I don't know, man.
Well, we'll look forward to that coming out. That's Make It A Double, which your website is what? Make It A Double.
Nope.
No.
The website is actually just doublepodcast.com. So doublepodcast.com.
If people go now, what are they going to see?
You can go now and see. I do have some information up on the first two episodes. I'm still writing the show notes for the third and fifth. The fourth one, I'm hoping I'm going to work that one out and have it. So I'm keeping it as my fourth one. But they're up. The pictures are up. There's just no sound, obviously. Okay. But they'll be up soon. I think I'm just going to push two or three right now as soon as I can, and then work the other ones.
All right. But. Excellent. We have a lot of things coming up, and it's been slow. It's summertime. I got two kids. I'm at the pool. I got a lot of things going on, vacation, work, family. So I'm trying to get these podcasts out. We did a recording tonight just to kind of have fun and get something out there and show you that we're still working on this thing. if you want to drop me a line, it's... I haven't done this in 2 weeks. I can't remember what my... it's waitwhatifpodcast@yahoo.com. On Facebook or facebook.com/WWI podcast. You can check us out on Twitter, which I don't tweet too much. I usually just tweet when new episodes are out, but it's WWI podcast is the Twitter. We don't have a website yet. You know, I was thinking about that. I don't have a Wait What If website. Just
I'm
my,
surprised.
Yeah.
Because you could have a lot of really cool stuff up there.
Yeah. I do the paperly, yeah. the paper that comes out, and I still got to tap that. So, I mean... We got things. Again, I'm only in my first 6 months, so bear with me. We're only going to get better from here. But future episodes, we, again, are going to be talking to the guy who does tiny houses. We're going to be talking to a true crime author. I also have my friend who is a toy maker, and I'm actually going to get him on probably next because he's a lot easier to get on than some of the other folks. We had our ghost hunter. We're going to go on a ghost hunt. She said they're open to it. Yeah, so we got to go on that.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. And that's about it. So until next time, ladies and gentlemen.